A2A one-on-one feature is a production of the nonprofit Adversity to Advocacy Alliance. The views and opinions expressed by our guests do not necessarily reflect those of A2A or advocates, allies, or ally organizations. We hope you'll find this interview both informative and inspiring. And now, here's our host, Liz St. John.
Dr. Kristen Neff is an associate professor in the Department of Educational Psychology at the University of Texas at Austin. She's the author of Self-Compassion, The Proven Power of Being Kind to Yourself. Welcome. Thank you for joining us today.
Oh, glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
While doing your postdoctoral work, you decided to conduct research on self-compassion, a central construct in Buddhist psychology, and one that had not yet been examined empirically. So what got you started down this path?
Well, for me, it really was a personal practice. I learned about self-compassion in a meditation course, and I started trying to be a better friend to myself, more supportive, kinder, and I was just blown away by the difference it made in my personal life. So then, then I did 2 years of postdoctoral study with a self-esteem researcher and was finding that although it's good to have self-esteem compared to hating yourself, so a lot of problems with self-esteem, like narcissism and the fact that it tends to be contingent. It's there for you when you succeed, but it deserts you when you fail, basically. And I thought, well, self-compassion is the perfect alternative because it's there for you precisely when you fail, when you struggle, when things aren't going so well. You know, self-compassion is basically being compassionate, supportive, caring towards yourself in moments of struggle. So I thought, well, why don't I give it a try? And I kind of defined the construct, and I created a scale to measure it and started the research ball going, and now it has a life of its own.
I do want to ask you about that research, but maybe we should take a moment to identify what self-compassion is not. You mentioned self-esteem. It is not self-esteem. What else is self-compassion not?
Right. So when I tried to define what self-compassion is, I was really worried about not getting confused with self-pity, right? Because self-pity is not a healthy state of mind. So what's the difference between self-pity and self-compassion? Well, self-compassion, it involves being kind and kind of sympathetic and caring towards yourself, which may be kind of you can maybe have that with self-pity. There's two things that make self-compassion different. One, self-compassion is connected in its stance. The word compassion actually means to suffer with in the Latin. So what we do with self-compassion is we all frame our experience in light of the shared human experience, right? Everyone's imperfect. Everyone struggles. It's not just me. Whereas self-pity is really all about me, you know, poor me, woe is me, you know, why is it, you're kind of playing the victim role. Self-compassion, you aren't a victim, you aren't isolated. You just recognize, hey, failure, mistake, struggle, this is part of the shared human experience. And then the other thing about self-compassion as opposed to self-pity, really at its root is mindfulness. There's a lot of talk about mindfulness, but basically mindfulness is a very balanced state of awareness. Well, first of all, you need to turn toward and acknowledge when you're having a hard time. If you just try to avoid it or resist it or, you know, sweep it under the rug, you can't give yourself compassion. But at the same time, you don't want to run away with like, oh, woe is me, this is the worst thing that's ever happened. You don't want to exaggerate the extent of what's happening either. That's much more like self-pity. So with mindfulness, you turn toward what's happening, you acknowledge it, you're courageous. I see, this is really hard right now. But you don't make more of it than it is. And so those two elements help prevent self-compassion from turning into self-pity. And I think they're largely why it's such a healthy state of mind.
And self-indulgent also is not self-compassion.
Yes, right. So self-indulgence, if you think about it, is giving yourself short-term pleasure, but at the expense of long-term harm. You know, you indulge in eating that entire tub of Ben and Jerry's ice cream, and you get sick afterward. It's not good for your body. So because self-compassion is based on caring for yourself, wanting the best for yourself, just like you might imagine a compassionate mother just let her child eat all the ice cream he wants because it hurts the child, the same thing with themselves. And so the research shows that self-compassionate people, they take better care of themselves. They go to the doctor more often. They exercise. They eat right. Again, because of this caring stance, this desire to help and support the self as opposed to just giving oneself pleasure.
Tell us about the actual studies you did. I know that you put together a scale and put together the experiments, if you will, on measuring self-compassion. So exactly, how do you measure it?
Yeah, so and people, if they're interested, they could take the self-compassion test on my website if you go to selfcompassion.org. But it's pretty straightforward. It just describes the behaviors that are self-compassionate. You know, I'm kind to myself when I'm struggling, or I tend to judge myself. It also measures, you know, the uncompassionate behaviors, or I feel isolated by my suffering, or I remember that failure is part of the human condition. So they're just straightforward statements like that. And so most of the research is done with the scale, but there's a lot of other methodologies now to study it. For instance, you could have people write to themselves mindfully about what's happening. You know, remembering that you have to prompt them to write about common humanity, how what you're going through is part of being human, and then write some words of kindness. Write to yourself as you would write to a good friend who is struggling with a similar issue you are. And so that's another way we can study self-compassion. What happens when we give people instructions to be self-compassionate in the moment? How does that change their mood? I'm getting very powerful effects in terms of, you know, reduced depression, reduced stress, increased happiness over time. And then I've also developed an intervention, an 8-week training program with a colleague that's taught all over the world now. So we're also starting to do research with that. How does it change lives? And the results are really pretty remarkable. It definitely changes people's lives for the better. Learning to be a good friend to yourself, probably the best thing you can do for yourself.
Do you find differences in self-compassion in men and women, or old and young people? Is it the same across socioeconomic groups?
Yeah, so there is a slight gender difference. It's not huge, but women tend to be a little less self-compassionate than men. They tend to be a little harder on themselves. But women are actually quite a bit more compassionate to others than men are. So you might say the difference is there's a big discrepancy among women between how they treat themselves and how they treat others. They're a lot kinder to others than themselves, whereas men, the discrepancy isn't so large. So, and we're just doing a study now actually showing a lot of that's linked to socialization. You know, women who are socialized to be self-sacrificing, to be caregivers, they tend to show this discrepancy more. So part of what we try to do when we teach self-compassion is, and let's face it, most of the women that come, people who come to our workshops are women, not all, but most of them. You know, we try to teach them that, hey, you will burn out if you just put all your energy caring for others and you don't actually give yourself compassion for the fact that it's hard for you as well. And so we actually help people learn to, it's really quite a humble agenda. You just include yourself in the circle of compassion. Don't just be so outward facing, you know, also turn inward facing when you're struggling, and this more balanced way of being compassionate to any suffering, yourself or that of others, is a much more sustainable way to be.
I always think about Oprah talking about if the mom is so busy taking care of everyone else and not taking care of herself, she won't be able to take care of everyone else. And on top of that, again, at the beginning of your flight, the airline is mindful to let you know about the oxygen mask, and the adult has to put it on first or you're not going to be able to help the kid.
That's right. And the other thing about that is you got to put the oxygen mask on when the plane is going down. So in other words, often we talk about self-care as like getting a massage and eating well and exercising. And that type of self-care is great. But what you need is when you are with someone else in pain, whether it's your child, whether it's your spouse or your friend, and they're suffering and you're resonating with their suffering, which means you feel what they're feeling, you need to, in that moment, actually acknowledge the fact that it's hard for you too and give yourself kindness as well as the other person. So it has to be done on the spot, not just afterward.
What do you know about self-compassion in people who have faced or continue to face a major adversity?
Well, what we're finding out about self-compassion is it's one of the absolutely most powerful sources of strength, coping, and resilience we have available to us. It's funny, a lot of people like think self-compassion is weak. You know, it's kind of like, oh, soft and weak. Just the opposite. Basically, with self-compassion, when times are tough, you are an inner ally, an inner support, an inner friend, as opposed to an inner enemy. I mean, most people, if they actually stop to look at the type of language they use with themselves, they're undermining themselves. They're mean, they're harsh, they're calling themselves names. You know, I'm a loser, I'm no good, I can't do this. So what we know through the research is that self-compassion is absolutely one of the most powerful sources of coping and strength and resilience we have available to us. It's funny, a lot of people think that self-compassion is a weakness, it's for sissies. Just the opposite, right? So most people, inside their own head, they're actually always cutting themselves down, criticizing themselves, calling themselves names. So it's basically like they have an inner enemy inside their head. Whereas with self-compassion, you're an inner ally, right? When you go into combat, you want to have an ally at your side, not an enemy. You know, I say that jokingly, but we actually did a study with veterans coming back from Iraq and Afghanistan, and we found that these soldiers' levels of self-compassion, in other words, how supportive they were to themselves about what they went through, that was more predictive of whether or not they developed PTSD 1 year later than level of combat exposure. Okay. Even more important than what they saw abroad was how they related to themselves, how they treated themselves in the face of this trauma, and that's what determines whether or not they cope.
You've done so much fascinating research and figured out a lot of things. What have you not yet figured out that you would love to figure out in your field?
Well, there's a lot more to be done. So we're actually doing a study right now. We haven't gotten the results yet. I'm looking at the brains of people on self-compassion. There's been a little work with the physiology of self-compassion and how it, you know, impacts sympathetic nervous system responding, for instance. But we don't really know what the brain on self-compassion looks like yet. But we're doing fMRI studies as we speak, so we'll know that soon. I think we don't know a lot about cultural differences, socioeconomic differences. We know a few basic things, like compassion is just as important for people from Asian cultures who are more self-critical, but they tend to have a little less self-compassion because their culture is so self-critical, even though it's helpful for them. But there's just a lot more to be done. We don't really know what's in the U.S., you know, various ethnic or economic groups, what the differences are. So there's a lot to be done, but we do know a lot. There's about 1,500 studies now on self-compassion, so we're getting a pretty large body of research.
Talk a little bit about the mind-body connection. You alluded to it earlier a bit. But
yes.
So
yeah.
If we're self-compassionate, we might feel what?
Right. So what we know is, so typically when there's a problem in our lives or a problem in ourselves, we fail or make a mistake, what happens is we go into threat defense mode, right? Our body says, oh my God, there's a problem. How am I going to deal with this? We go into fight, flight, or freeze. And unfortunately, when the problem is ourselves, we turn that on ourselves. We fight ourselves with self-criticism, or we flee, we feel isolated and alone, or we freeze, we get stuck in rumination about how bad we are, how bad the problem is. So self-compassion, all that's a sympathetic nervous system response. Self-compassion activates the parasympathetic nervous system, the care system. When we feel cared for by ourselves or by our mother or our friend, whoever it is, we activate this other system which makes us feel safe. It releases oxytocin and opiates. We can actually relax and calm down from fight, flight, or freeze and go into, again, more care mode. And we know that that's what self-compassion does, and that's one of the reasons we're finding, for instance, it's linked to greater heart rate variability, which gives you more flexible responding. It's linked to less cortisol activation. It's linked to better immune function. So we do know that feeling safe because we feel cared for is good for the body.
Dr. Kristen Neff is an associate professor at University of Texas at Austin and the author of Self-Compassion, The Proven Power of Being Kind to Yourself. And she has a new online video course. You can check that out at selfcompassion.org. The video course is a series?
That's right. So we've developed a Mindful Self-Compassion course, which is a more intensive course. This is a shorter online version of it. It's 8 one-hour sessions of online study. with mentorship sessions and group online interactions. So I'm really excited about it. I think it'll really get the message out there.
All right. Kristen, thank you so much for joining us today, one-on-one.
Thank you.
You've been listening to A2A One-on-One, an outreach project of the nonprofit Adversity to Advocacy Alliance. To listen to other one-on-one interviews and to learn more about A2A, please visit us online at a2aalliance.org. And thanks for helping us spread the word that we help ourselves by helping others.